It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The White House has notified the Senate that President Obama has vetoed congressional legislation to approve the Keystone XL pipeline. There are serious safety concerns about moving tar sands oil from Canada in a pipeline that runs south to Texas, especially when it runs through Nebraska and over the Oglala Aquifer, one of the largest supplies of fresh water in the United States. So what is the safe way to get oil to the refineries? The Bakken oil being transported east by rail from North Dakota and Montana is described as highly volatile. And just last week, a train loaded with crude derailed in West Virginia, causing a spectacular fire and forcing the evacuation of hundreds of families, and federal officials are calling for safety improvements. But what should those safety improvements be? And are they enough to prevent death and disaster if a fuel train derailment happens in a densely populated place like Pittsburgh? We're looking at these questions today with Patricia Riley, Senior Vice President of the Association of American Railroads, whose members include major freight carriers in North America. Patricia Riley, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us in Studio A is Michael Huss, Deputy Director of Public Safety for the City of Pittsburgh. Michael Huss, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And John Schmitz, who has been covering these issues for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, is with us in studio as well. John Schmitz, good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here.
And John, let me begin with you. As you reported, the railroad cars involved in the derailment in West Virginia last week were a newer model that was supposed to be safer than older tankers blamed in other oil train explosions. Explain the difference here.
Well, the bulk of the cars that are being used, the tankers that are being used now to ship crude oil, are a design that was conceived in about 1981, and they were originally intended not to carry volatile compounds. They were built to carry corn syrup and stuff like that. I think there's pretty universal agreement that those cars, DOT 111s, are not safe for the transport of crude oil.
And this whole oil boom is what necessitated transporting the oil. Someone had to come up with a way to get that oil from out west back east to the refineries. So nobody bothered to say, let's design a rail car. Apparently, a car designed specifically to do that. They took what was in existence and put it to use.
Yes, and then after a couple of these well-publicized explosions and fires, the railroad industry, the Association of American Railroads, voluntarily adopted a tougher standard in 2011, and that was for a new car called the 1232. But and that had several safety improvements, but there have now been three explosions of that type of vehicle also. So obviously those improvements aren't doing the job.
Patricia Riley, the specifications for the newer cars that John is describing here were issued by the Association of American Railroads and came amid concerns about the safety of older models. So this was an example of the your organization and of the industry saying voluntarily, we need to do something here to improve prospects for safety. And they came amid concerns about the safety of those older models. So after what happened last week, is it back to the drawing board? What is the thought process at this point?
Well, your listeners probably are aware that the industry is waiting for a rulemaking from the federal government on tank car standards and design. And while your guess is absolutely right, it was the AAR that implemented the designs for the 1232. The AAR also believes that every single tank car that is carrying crude oil today, including the 1232, needs to be retrofitted and upgraded. That was good in 2011. It's not good in 2015. And we've been advocating for that stronger tank car for a while.
So with the stronger, with a newer model in place in the incident in West Virginia, that what John described as the upgrade from the old DOT 111s to the newer reinforced cars, whatever that improvement was, it still didn't prevent what happened in West Virginia last week. What is the biggest takeaway for you regarding the derailment and fire in West Virginia? Does it raise new concerns? Does it make you say we need to go to an even higher standard than what we have? What is the thought here in the final analysis?
Well, we are looking. The rail industry is indeed looking to go to a higher standard than the 1232. We believe that the 1232s that are moving crude oil today need increased shell thickness. They need the use of jacket protection and thermal protection. We want to see high-capacity pressure relief valves on the top of these tank cars. So we have asked the federal government to put into place and seriously consider these design and construction standards from what exists today.
And Patricia Riley, we have a connection with you, a phone connection that's not the strongest. So stand by. We're going to reconnect with you and hopefully have a better phone line so that we can hear you just a little bit better. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're discussing the issue of fuel train accidents and safety with our guests, Patricia Riley. She is Senior Vice President of the Association of American Railroads. Also, Michael Huss, Deputy Director of Public Safety for the City of Pittsburgh, and John Schmitz, a reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh at wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Some environmental groups are concerned about the safety of the older tankers. And one of the things that we'll ask Patricia Riley when she returns is what regulations the organization favors and how you phase out or retrofit those older cars over a period of years. Michael Huss, I want to bring you into the conversation. Again, Mr. Huss is the Deputy Public Safety Director for the City of Pittsburgh. In your analysis of these issues, what are the safety concerns that you have, and how would you like to see the railroad industry address them?
Obviously, the greatest concern we have is the explosion and fire of these Bakken crude cars. That tends to be the history of these accidents. We would like to see, obviously, these tank cars take a route outside of populated areas of the city of Pittsburgh. We have spent time and money in preparation with firefighting foam, some foam trailers, and that ability to fight these fires, but nonetheless, there's that time to mobilize and to get there and to begin to extinguish the fire. So it does create a hazard for the number of cars that are traveling through our city.
And we'll get in a little bit later. We'll get into specifically what the plan is if, God forbid, the worst case scenario does occur. Do we know why the trains come through Pittsburgh, John?
I think the railroad industry would probably be better to answer that, but I think they take the fastest, least expensive routes to get the oil to refineries, and one of the destinations is Philadelphia, and so and there are other refineries on the East Coast. So you have trains that come through Pittsburgh going eastbound that are loaded, then they return westbound empty. They go through Erie quite frequently along that route, and I think, railroads were developed around cities, so most of the major rail lines do pass through cities.
Patricia Riley, I understand we have you back.
I'm back.
Good, and you sound we have a better connection. So thank you for bearing with us. And again, Patricia Riley is a Senior Vice President of the Association of American Railroads. Something just came up. I'm not sure if you caught it during the time that we reconnected with you, but Michael Huss, our Deputy Public Safety Director here in Pittsburgh, mentioned that folks here in the city would prefer that the trains didn't run through Pittsburgh, which of course they do. Is this something that the railroad industry is looking at, the idea of possibly rerouting some of these oil tanker trains around highly populated areas?
Well, I think John was, when I joined back on, I think the point is there's no simple solution for rerouting. The railroads are bringing the oil to the refineries, which are at the ports. And the railroads are also using the safe and secure route to move the crude oil. We work with the federal government to determine a routing tool that helps take in many, many factors, population being one of them, terrain, class of track, weather conditions, and that determines the safe and secure route for us to move. Rerouting might sound like a very good solution, but the reality is rerouting those trains might mean moving it to track which is not the best track to move hazardous or flammable liquids.
So having heard that, Michael Huss, what is your reaction?
Upgrade those tracks. Obviously, we want to see, and I understand that some of the refineries are in populated areas. If you look at Philadelphia, the refinery is really close to the city, and I would understand that they would have to take that route. When you look at Pittsburgh, for instance, we don't have a refinery in the city, and therefore I believe that material could be routed a different way to avoid those populated areas.
What is the process for someone representing the city of Pittsburgh, whether it's you or Stephen Bukar, the director of public safety, or the mayor, whomever, to voice their concerns?
Well, pretty much that's what we can do is voice our concerns. We don't have a lot of regulatory authority. We can't, for instance, pass an ordinance to prohibit rail traffic through our city. It's all contained within federal law. So our ability to regulate rail traffic like we do other things and other types of traffic in a city, our hands are tied.
And there are certain ways that there's a process for creating the safety regulations that govern railroads. Explain, John, how it works.
I don't know that I would agree with you that it works.
The railroads
had to petition the federal government in 2011 after the first couple accidents. They petitioned the government for tighter regulations, and then when the government dragged its feet, the Department of Transportation, the railroads adopted their own voluntary standards. Now we're waiting again for the Department of Transportation to issue, as Patricia mentioned, new standards for tankers. That's a very convoluted, long process that involves inviting public comment from interested parties and reviewing that comment and proposed rulemakings that are published in the Federal Register and other places. And it's just a bureaucratic slog. And when it's over, and we hope it will be in May, we'll have these new standards. But then the question that will also have to be answered is how quickly will the owners of these tankers be required to either retrofit them or take them out of service and replace them with safer vehicles.
Patricia Riley, some environmental groups are concerned about the safety of the older tankers. And they haven't called for an outright ban at this point, but they'd like to see the process of phasing out or retrofitting the older cars speeded up. First of all, what regulations does your organization favor?
Well, first of all, it's important to know that the freight rail industry does not own the tank cars. We don't make them. We don't own them. We use them to move this commodity. We have said for years now that we would like to see the DOT 111s upgraded, retrofitted. But we've also said for those older cars that cannot be upgraded, we want them taken out of the fleet and they should not be carrying crude oil.
So what's the solution here? And if we're talking about a retrofit, but that could take some estimates say that it could take over a decade. So what is the solution? Is there a way to speed up the process of retrofitting or phasing out the older cars?
Well, the freight rail industry is not going to be in charge of retrofitting or upgrading
cars. But you can advocate, and you have taken initiatives to make these fuel tankers safer and stronger. What would be the suggestions that you would make? What would you like to see?
We are suggesting an aggressive timeline be implemented for the upgrades and, if necessary, The cars that can't be retrofitted, they should be taken out of crude service.
I referred at the top of the show to this week's Associated Press report that the federal government predicts trains hauling crude oil or ethanol will derail an average of 10 times a year over the next two decades, causing an estimated $4 billion in damage, possibly killing hundreds of people if an accident were to occur in a densely populated area like Pittsburgh. What is your reaction to that report?
Well, first of all, that's not a new report. The report that was issued by the Department of Transportation actually came out last August. And we went on the record that saying that we believe the claims made in the report were unsubstantiated. The statistics simply do not occur here in the U.S. over the last couple of years to bear out the claims that this report is making. And we're on the record as saying that.
Is that and just to clarify, you are correct, this report came out last August, but the Associated Press delved into it just within – this was front page news in Pittsburgh just this week, for example – and it has to do with the concerns over the accident that occurred in West Virginia. When you look at what's happened just in the past year, the incident over the a railroad bridge over the Schuylkill River in Philadelphia, in which oil cars were leaning precariously off the tracks on that bridge. Also, an incident that occurred in Vandergrift here last year with a tanker car derailing. There have been, along with the West Virginia incident, three that come to mind. Are these government predictions, while it's hard to say that they are, that you can look into a crystal ball and say for sure what's going to happen, are they really that far off base based on what is occurring, what we're seeing now?
What the report does say and what we're in agreement with is that more crude oil is being moved today. And as a result of that, the industry has stepped up its practices and protocols for handling this crude safely. There are slower speeds nationwide. There's stepped up track inspections for those lines that these crude oil trains are traveling. We inspect this track more than the federal government requires us to. There are trackside detectors that are in place that will pick up if there are defects in the wheels of the tank cars, and we can get them out of service. And as I said earlier, there is the route selection that with the federal government approved tool allows us to determine the safe and secure route for moving these oil trains.
Patricia, I wonder if I could just ask you what you thought of the results of Governor Cuomo's state inspections in New York, which, as I recall, found something on the order of 100 defects and 8 serious defects with the infrastructure.
Well, I am not that familiar with what it is that Governor Cuomo found with his inspections in upstate New York. I do believe he's working with the FRA and our members to identify where there may be areas for improvement. And I believe that our members are working with not only the government, but the state DOT in the tri-state area to better educate about the kinds of inspections, the kinds of practices and protocols that are currently in place.
412-246-2002 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation with Michael Huss, Deputy Director of Public Safety for the City of Pittsburgh, John Schmitz, reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and Patricia Riley, Senior Vice President of the Association of American Railroads, with us by phone from Washington. Let's go to Joseph in Pittsburgh, who's been waiting. Joseph, thank you. You're on the air.
Hello. This is more than a comment than anything else. I guess my concern is the disproportionate amount of time we're spending talking about something with a relatively small amount of risk and maybe putting too much on an industry to overcome a risk that they are trying to work on and work through the best they can. And as an example, you're going to be more likely to die in a car wreck, and we're not doing more inspections on cars, making them, doing them every month. We still just have an annual checkup. So I guess why are we putting so much emphasis on this one thing that has a very small amount of risk and very small chance of something occurring when there are so many other things that we could be working on that we have would have a much greater impact on our life? And I'll take my comment after the comments off the air.
All right, Joseph, thank you for the call. Thank you for expressing your comments and your question. And I guess I would refer to Michael Huss. He is saying that the chances, Joseph is saying that the chances of being in a car accident, of any number of things happening as opposed to a dangerous railroad derailment are more likely to occur. And why are we talking about this?
Well, he's right. It has a lower probability than a lot of the other type of emergencies we face, including car accidents. But anytime you're trying to manage risk, you look not only at the probability but the severity of an accident. So although it has a low probability, it has a high consequence if there is an incident. So if you look at what happened in Quebec several years ago where you had 47 deaths due to an explosion of a crude oil train. So it's a low probability. He's right. And we have traffic accidents and fatalities on a regular basis throughout the city. However, we need to be prepared for those low probability, high consequence type incidents also. And that's what I would consider this type of scenario.
And if I could weigh in, please.
Sure,
I don't disagree with that at all. And because of that, we have stepped up not only employee training, but our outreach to the communities in which we do move the crude oil and hazardous materials. And we not only train 20,000-plus emergency responders and firefighters a year about the hazardous materials that we are moving through their communities, but in recognition of the fact that, indeed, we are moving more crude oil today, we are in the communities with much more hands-on safety training. One of our members, CSX Railroad, has a safety train that has been traveling throughout their footprint, again, working hands-on with responders. Railroads are flying emergency responders out to Pueblo, Colorado, the world's largest research and testing facility for railroads, where there's a 10-day hands-on course, classroom and hands-on, just dedicated to crude oil. There's online courses for firefighters and responders. And most recently, there's been a mobile phone app which has been developed called Ask Rail that the railroads are sharing with designated firefighters that gives you the information on a train, and if there is an incident, provides you with the information on how to deal with it. That information exists today with the conductor and the engineer, but this is a realization that things are needed much more real time. And so that Ask Rail app, it does exist. And I think it is important to point out that, we have 2 million trains a year moving in this country. That's a lot of trains moving. Crude oil is about 1.7% of all that traffic. And in 2014, we only had three accidents involving crude oil. No accident is acceptable, large or small. I will absolutely say that. And we do absolutely share the concern that the public has about the safety of moving crude. But as your original caller said, it does help if we put into perspective how much is moving, how many accidents have occurred, and importantly, what the railroad industry is doing to work with communities and responders should an accident occur.
Let's go to Ted in Mount Washington. Ted, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
How you doing? Real quick, as a citizen, I'm very concerned about the industry. To me, you look at nuclear plants, they're heavily regulated. The probability of an accident may be zero, but I don't want a black swan event to happen in Pittsburgh. To me, it seems like there's no transparency for the industry. And also, I don't know why the federal government is dragging its feet to regulate this industry, because it needs to be heavily regulated. I think we're putting profit ahead of people. And if you look at Pittsburgh, I don't even think there's an evacuation plan. And how are you going to evacuate the elderly and people in rural areas? If you looked at that fireball in West Virginia, just imagine if that was in Pittsburgh. There's no way I think that the local response would be able to handle a situation like that. And to me, I just think that we're really kicking the can down the road, and we need to enforce regulation on this industry.
Well, you've expressed a lot of concerns there, Ted, and I will get to Michael Huss here and get his response to what the plan is, again, if the scenario you described were to happen. But I know that our time is limited with Patricia Riley, and before we let you go, Patricia, when you hear someone like Ted here who just called in, is in addition to all of the safety advances that and the mechanisms that have been put in place that you outlined and articulated earlier, has there been any thought given to slowing down the volume of crude oil that is transported? Are we in the interest of making money, which obviously these oil companies and the transporters are looking to do, and that's understandable. That's what our economy is built on. But are we doing it at the expense of safety? Has any consideration been given to the idea of slowing down the volume of oil, the volume of oil, lessening that and lessening the rate at which it's transported?
Thank you for the question. You know, first and foremost, safety is our number one priority. It is what drives what it is we do today. It is not profits. And please recognize that the railroad industry here in the United States, we have what is called a common carrier obligation. We cannot pick and choose commodities to move and commodities not to move. If an oil shipper wants us to move something from point A to point B, we are obligated, we are mandated by law to do that. We are not the only ones moving oil. There are pipelines moving oil as well. And the reality is that railroads are moving more oil today because railroads can get into areas in North Dakota due to their flexibility, and that's why we're moving oil out of there. Pipelines will be doing a lot more of it, but right now that is our primary obligation to those shippers.
Patricia, you've been very generous with your time. I'm wondering if you have time to take one more question from a caller.
Sure.
Okay, let's go to Kim in Lawrenceville. Kim, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm going to throw out some stuff there. I live in Lawrenceville, 57th Street, and one of the panelists mentioned that there's no direct refineries in Pittsburgh. Well, there's the Sunoco Logistics. It's a large plant. And neighbors have said that it's had problems in the past. Every night they deliver oil. The tankers come in, and they stop just short of the river at the Sunoco Logistics plant. And I'd sort of like to ask if any of the comments about safety and training and all that stuff are made by people, I'm just saying in general, I can't remember who said what, that live two blocks from a situation like this.
You're bringing up a security concern, correct?
Yes, security concerns and also inspection. I've been after them about smells of gas leakage for 7 years now, and I'm getting the runaround.
Okay,
I have lots of names to quote who have contacted, and nobody seems to be taking it.
Okay, let's see what Patricia Riley can do with this question. And I don't know how much of this falls under your purview, Patricia, but what can you say to assuage some of Kim's concerns?
Well, I know as far as the railroads are concerned, they work with local community responders on evacuation plans. We have equipment and resources in place if there is an accident related to the rail, but I think I heard your reader, if you're a listener properly, she's asking more about the security of the refinery itself.
She may. Go ahead, Kim.
There's a rail that runs right to and through along the river, this plant. I'm not sure it's a refinery, but they store oil and gas, and it's Sunoco and Getco. Their trucks come in and out of there, and the railroad, the tankers come in every night after about 10 to unload. Mm-hmm. And it's two blocks from me. It's right down here, 57th Street at Butler Street in Lawrenceville. And,
Well, there are emergency plans in place if an accident were to occur, an incident were to occur. The railroads that are moving the tank cars into the refinery have been working in partnership with the refinery and your local responders and local officials. People have the information about the type of material which is being moved and how to work with it and deal with it should an incident occur. And there are resources in place that would address both an environmental impact as well.
Kim, hopefully that answers your question and concerns at this point, and we need to take a break. We also have to thank Patricia Riley at this point for joining us. And again, Patricia with us by phone from Washington today. She is the she works for the Association of American Railroads, and she has been very generous with her time. Thank you so much for being with us on the program today, Patricia. We appreciate it.
Appreciate the opportunity.
And we will continue our discussion with our guests in studio, Michael Huss, who is the Deputy Director of Public Safety for the City of Pittsburgh, and also John Schmitz, a reporter with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Your questions are welcome at 412-246-2002. This is Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about the safety of rail cars moving fuel from west to east through Pittsburgh and into areas like Philadelphia and throughout Pennsylvania, for that matter. The serious safety concerns that have been discussed in the wake of last week's train derailment in West Virginia. It's just one of a number of train derailments involving fuel cars, which some say are outdated, that have not been brought up to safe standards, and are a disaster waiting to happen, particularly if there were to be a derailment in a highly populated area. There was also a government report, a federal government report, which was cited by the Associated Press in a story this week, that the federal government predicts trains hauling crude oil or ethanol will derail an average of 10 times a year over the next two decades, potentially causing $4 billion in damage and possibly killing hundreds of people. You can weigh in with our guests at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. We're talking in Studio A with Michael Huss, Deputy Director of Public Safety for the City of Pittsburgh, and also John Schmitz, who is a reporter with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let's go to the phones and take a call from Richard in Sewickley. Richard, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your comment or question.
Okay. In this whole issue that's being discussed over the last several months, is this 1232 car that everybody's seeming to brag about an up from the rails redesign, or is it just an add-on to the existing older design, and how many have actually had the add-ons made? That's one issue that I want to raise.
All right, let's address that, and then stay on the line with us, Richard, and we'll get to your second question. John, I think that might be one for you.
Yeah, I think it's a redesign from the wheels up. It's not a retrofit of the old cars, but we've now had three explosions and fires involving this newer model, and so now I think it is itself suspect as a safe transport vehicle for crude oil.
All right, Richard, and then the second part of your question?
The discussion here, maybe just due to your production requirements, focuses seemingly on the City of Pittsburgh, but obviously, clearly calling the Sewickley area is up right up from the Conway Yards. These B&O, whatever it is, trains move through
Baltimore and Ohio train.
The yep. Town road, yeah. Every day, you see the black cars, the oil tanker cars often. So one time last fall, I had occasion to stand and watch. There was 105 of those cars in a single train. And clearly, the the emergency response effort should be a more than just in the city of Pittsburgh. It should be a countywide effort and even multi-county, similar to what you have in evacuation plans around a nuclear power station. So it's, I think a lot of people are waiting as to just some information on what is a response to a West Virginia-type situation in a heavily populated area with residential, commercial, and even hospitals.
All right, Richard. Thank you. Richard from Sewickley with a good question, and we'll put that to Michael Huss, who is the Deputy Public Safety Director in Pittsburgh. What is the plan? Richard brought this up. Certainly it's on the minds of many. If what happened in West Virginia last week were to happen in Pittsburgh, what is the plan in the case of an emergency such as that?
Yes, and just to get to the caller's point, that we do plan for this not just in the city of Pittsburgh, but throughout Allegheny County and actually the 13 counties surrounding the city. We have a response group that is Region 13.
He's saying, why isn't there a county plan? And you're saying there is.
There is. And we're looking at this as a regional basis. When we talk about rerouting traffic, obviously we'd like to see that train traffic around less populated areas because it makes it easier to deal with. Obviously, any type of incident involving this Bakken crude, your first priority is life. Second is property. And third is going to be the environment. So the challenges that we face some of the properties of this Bakken crude is such that it is crude oil. It's not refined. So the properties, the physical properties of the liquid changes from car to car. Certain wells have different physical properties of the liquid. Oil, crude oil pumped from some of these wells at different times have varying degrees of physical properties. So it makes it highly volatile. And obviously, as I mentioned before, our number one concern is explosion and fire. And our first priority is going to be obviously to try to isolate anybody from that area and evacuate those folks as fast as we possibly can. That's going to be a challenge. We can fight some of these fires. And if you look at what happened in West Virginia and you saw that the strategy was to allow some of these tank cars to burn out, because what you end up doing is you end up with less of an environmental hazard than if you actually extinguish the fire. So that's nothing new. That's done with other types of hazardous materials. But our number one concern is to have a derailment and a fire and explosion in a highly populated area. So we have spent considerable federal dollars on foam firefighting trailers, firefighting foam. We've done training and that sort of thing to prepare us to respond and fight the fire. But understand that it takes time to respond that equipment, to get it in place, and to actually begin to control the fire. So evacuation is going to be very important. Having the residents cooperate with us in the event of an incident and quickly evacuate an area is going to be it's those basic things that are going to make or break the day for us in an incident involving this type of material. As one caller said earlier, we're very familiar with the logistics, Sunoco Logistics in Lawrenceville, but understand that that's refined product. So that's a refined heating oil, a gasoline, and those types of things that's already been refined. The problem we're seeing with this Bakken crude is it's the other chemicals that are in this product in addition to the crude oil. So
that's what makes it so volatile.
That's correct. There's other propane and things like this in there that's making it volatile. And as I said, it's tough to come up with an MSDS sheet on Bakken crude that has
what's an MSDS?
Material safety data sheet.
Okay.
Because the physical properties of that crude is different from car to car. So, we're familiar with it. We're familiar with where it's being shipped throughout the city, and we're preparing the best we can. But people need to understand that it's still a volatile product, and it does, as the one caller said, it's a lower probability, but it could have the potential for a high consequence.
I was going to point to an analogy, I guess. I don't know how applicable it is, but before 9/11, people would have said that was almost an impossibility, but it happened. And in the wake of that, I'm guessing people like you have to prepare. You have to keep these scenarios in mind, don't you?
We have to. And to not consider this and be prepared for it, you know, it would be neglect on our part. So we have to be prepared for it. We have to make sure that we're thinking about these new challenges. If you ever look, you know, we used to do commodity flow studies and stuff, and I'm not going to get into the numbers, but if you look at the change in our rail traffic in the city of Pittsburgh, it's turned completely over with Bach and Cruz. So, you know, we're aware of that.
In terms of it being increased traffic?
Increased traffic and, you know, the percentage of cars.
And where do the and where does this higher percentage of cars, what are the routes, what parts of Pittsburgh do these trains travel through?
We got them through pretty much all parts of the city. I'm not going to get into the direct routes and a lot of that stuff because of security reasons. But it's going throughout our region on a regular basis, and we know that we're preparing for that, and we're preparing for that. Hopefully, we'll never have to face an incident or a derailment with this type of material.
Just to give you a few examples, we have reported on the route. So, in fact, we went to the Office of Open Records last year with an appeal to get the information that the railroads provided to the state. And just to cite a couple places where the trains run regularly, they run through Station Square on the line between Station Square and the river. They run past the David L. Lawrence Convention Center in downtown Pittsburgh. They do go out Route 28 in that corridor. They do go out through the north side. And the gentleman who said he saw a train and counted over 100 cars, that's not unusual. That's usually the length of these trains, around 100 cars. 30 to 35,000 gallons of crude per tanker.
And the access to this information that you just cited, John Schmitz, it's available in Pennsylvania, and the rules vary from state to state, but reporters like you have access to those here, do they not?
Well, what happened was the government ordered the railroads after one of the accidents to report to state emergency management officials the number of trains per week carrying over a certain threshold of crude, and what routes they used, and that information was provided to Pennsylvania. We asked for it. Pennsylvania said we're not giving it to you. We appealed and got the release of it. News organizations in other states have successfully done similar appeals, and some states have continued to withhold the information, including West Virginia, by the way, where the explosion occurred a few weeks.
Right. We need to take one more break, and then we'll come back with our guest, Michael Huss of the Department of Safety for the City of Pittsburgh, also John Schmitz of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll take the calls from Robert in Southside, Jeff in Lancaster, get to as many emails as we can. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about fuel tanker safety in the wake of the railroad derailment that occurred in West Virginia last week. Michael Huss of the Public Safety Department for the City of Pittsburgh and John Schmitz of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette are with us in Studio A. Let's go to a call from Robert on the South Side who's been waiting. Robert, thank you. You're on the air. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, my question is this. Well, it's a comment and a question. Number one, the comment is all the trains that I see go through Pittsburgh and in rural areas where I have lived, not all trains are dedicated to hauling just one product. They're hauling different products at the same time. And the crude oil that is on some of them tankers there, you'll see tankers with crude oil in like three or four tankers, and you'll see another following that would be like chlorine and or not liquid nitrogen. With the combination, if God forbid, a derailment of these rupturing from a derailment, the mixture of these chemicals would create a greater hazard than just the crude itself.
So you're asking, is the danger from the cars is the danger from the cars from the crude itself, or is it from the cars? John, I'll let you maybe tackle that one.
Well, my limited experience on this issue, I think that most of the trains going through Pittsburgh now that are carrying crude are all crude. I know the train that derailed in West Virginia had 107 cars, and I think 105 were oil tankers. I guess there are some shipments where there were fewer tankers, but most of the trains I see are all crude oil.
Michael, you mentioned though that there's volatility and that the makeup of what's in those tankers varies from car to car.
It does, and what the caller's saying is there are trains that come through here with different products in on the same train. You know, I can remember one derailment many years ago over the Yaukagany River in McKeesport that contained propane and chlorine-type cars. So that's not uncommon. Obviously, that would complicate any type of fire or derailment and fire. But, you know, our hazardous materials folks have prepared to deal with those types of products, but it does complicate it. And it's a different series of, you know, with some of these, it might be more of an inhalation hazard and than a fire hazard, but nonetheless, the hazards are the same. And a derailment involving different products and different cars would be more complicated to deal with.
And we have this email from Paul who says, I learned that these trains from North Dakota are often carrying not just crude oil, but gases like propane. Also, these gases make the contents much more flammable than normal crude oil. Why aren't the regulations tighter on the transportation of highly flammable gas-liquid mixtures?
And that's the issue in itself when you're talking about Bakken crude. It's the other chemicals that are in that oil that you don't have when you have diesel fuel or gasoline or those types of refined products traveling by rail and other means. The Bakken has those other properties and those other chemicals in there, and that's part of the problem. Could you, you know, one of the solutions it may be is if over time they start to refine this product in the Dakotas, in North Dakota, and ship it after it's been refined and some of those products separated.
There's an idea. That's
yeah, and I don't know. I can't. I'm not a petroleum engineer, and I can't put a price tag on
that. You might need
to
propose that to somebody. Let's go take a call from Jeff in Lancaster. Jeff, welcome. We've got about 30 seconds or so here, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, he kind of touched upon what my question was. I mean, by all means, increase the standards, make safer rail cars, but Bakken crude is highly volatile. It's more volatile than most other types of crude oil. Why not reduce the volatility at the source before you even load it into the tanker car? You know, less volatile crude in a safer car would seem to be eliminate the problem.
Jeff, everyone in the studio is nodding at what you're saying.
That's correct, and I think it's just a matter of the facilities and the infrastructure doesn't exist there. They're trying to move this product before that infrastructure was built, and you know, I can't put a price tag on what that would cost, but obviously for all of us, it would be safer if the product was refined and some of those more volatile compounds were removed before transport.
John Schmitz, not sure what you can do with this, but in 30 seconds or so, in this type of situation where legislation seems to be needed, rather than leaving the issue to an administrative agency to go through a long rulemaking process, what is the chance that whole process may be adjusted?
Have you been following Congress lately?
Well, it's the partisan politics notwithstanding, you're saying that – I'm getting the feeling you're saying the chances are slim.
I think Congress is probably under the same pressure that the federal regulatory agencies are from the industry, from their lobbyists, and also the interest in preserving the emerging oil industry.
It's been a fascinating discussion. I want to thank all of our guests for taking part in it. Michael Huss, who is Deputy Director of Public Safety for the City of Pittsburgh. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
John Schmitz, reporter with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Thank you, John. And Patricia Riley of the Association of American Railroads, who was here earlier. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh.